What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, these NBA playoffs have been interesting this week. We've had sweeps. We've had overtime. We've had downright shitty basketball by my favorite team. So we'll get there when we get there. But yeah, it's been a very, very interesting week of basketball. So let's get right into it. Beginning on Monday night, we had the Cleveland Cavaliers sweep the Miami Heat on out with a 138-83 win. So Cleveland basically did exactly what Oklahoma City Thunder did as well. It just came right in, absolutely obliterated their opponent and said, hey, what up, y'all? We're here. We'll see what happens in the semifinals round. That's when you're actually going to start getting tested. But I mean, hey, taking care of the Miami Heat is not an easy feat simply because they are a good team when it comes to the postseason. But it's just Cleveland had way too much for them. So Cleveland has moved on to the Eastern Conference semifinals. Then also on Monday night, we had a crazy matchup between the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets. It was a pretty close game. Golden State jumped out to a pretty solid lead, but then Houston started storming back, making it an interesting game. But Golden State got the win 109-106. Jimmy Butler came back, and he had 27 points. Podziemski, he had 26 points. And while it was a close game, like I said, Golden State pretty much dominated this game, and it was pretty much them from start to finish. It's just Houston started to make a nice run there in the fourth quarter. But then on Wednesday, Houston smashed Golden State 131-116, and it was all around excellent team basketball from the Houston Rockets. Van Vliet had 26 points, Brooks had 24 points, Thompson had 25 points. They played great defensively, and they really just took care of business. I mean, Steph Curry was even pretty much non-existent in this game. So it was all Houston all night on Wednesday, and game six is tonight, Friday. Golden State is up 3-2, so Golden State could either finish out this series tonight, or Houston could tie it up, and we will be headed to a game seven, so we'll see what happens there. The next series we're going to talk about is the Indiana Pacers versus the Milwaukee Bucks series. Milwaukee choked this one away. Indiana got the win in overtime, 119-118, but it really should not have headed into overtime. Milwaukee was just handing it to Indiana for the majority of this game. Then all of a sudden the fourth quarter hit and they just choked. Flat out choked. They could not make a shot. They could not make a pass. They just were losing it. It was the weirdest sequence of events, and Indiana just did what they needed to do. They knocked down the shots when they needed to. Halliburton had a solid game as well with 26 points, but he made the plays in overtime. He was the one who made all the plays in overtime, and Indiana moves on to the Eastern Conference semifinals. But Milwaukee just straight up choked that one away. But I mean, even if they hadn't choked that one away, Indiana pretty much dominated this series. Milwaukee, they did what they did all year. And that is Giannis dominated. Nobody else on this team played any consistent basketball. And they always squandered away a lead. So that's just what they did in the postseason. So we'll see what happens with Milwaukee in the offseason. Because it sounds like there's a potential that Giannis will no longer be with the Milwaukee Bucks. You never know what's going to happen, but that's just kind of what it sounded like, where he might be with somebody new next year. So this might have been the end of the Giannis era up in Milwaukee, but like I said, you never know what's going to happen. Then the next series, which of course ended up being the best series of them all, was between the Detroit Pistons and the New York Knicks on Tuesday. Detroit won the close one, 106-103. Cunningham had 24 points. Thompson had 22 points. And it was just a beautiful basketball game from the Detroit Pistons. But then last night, unfortunately for them, they did what they've done this whole series. And that is, they're right there. The game is right there for the taking for them. And then they just can't get the job done. New York was obviously the better team in this one. And Jalen Brunson, this dude is for real. So the Knicks walked away with the win on Thursday, 116-113. And Brunson had 40 points plus the game winner. I mean, not even just the game winner. I mean, down the stretch, Whew, the Knicks played great basketball down the stretch, and Brunson was that dude. He was knocking down the shots when he needed to. He was making great defensive plays. It was just a fantastic game from Jalen Brunson last night, and the New York Knicks move on to the conference semifinals, and we'll see what they got up in the next round, but this team looks pretty damn good when Jalen Brunson is flying high like he did in this one. Then the Boston Celtics versus the Orlando Magic, that their last game took place on Tuesday, and Boston just annihilated Orlando. They did what they needed to do, and they have moved on to the Eastern Conference semifinals. They got the win 120-89. Jason Tatum put them to sleep, 35 points, 10 assists, and 8 rebounds, so he was just a couple rebounds shy of a triple-double, but had an exceptionally dominating game. And the Boston Celtics have moved on, and we'll see. They're still ready to defend their title. Then the best series, which I thought was going to be the best series between the Denver Nuggets and the Los Angeles Clippers on Tuesday. Denver just obliterated the Clippers, 131-115. Jamal Murray went off for 43 points. Jokic had a quiet triple-double, and by quiet, I mean it was only 13 points, 12 assists, and 10 rebounds. So that's a quiet triple-double from Jokic, but he still had a triple-double. And then Westbrook had 21 points as well. Westbrook has been very reliable in these playoffs so far. And then Thursday night, Los Angeles, they got the better of the Nuggets in this one, 111-105. Playoff Kawhi showed up, 27 points, 10 rebounds, and actually a good playoff. James Harden showed up with dropping 28 points himself. So Game 7, yes, we have us a Game 7, which I thought we would have in this series. Game 7's Saturday night, and it's for all the marbles. But this has been a very solid series between two very good teams, and we'll see what happens on Saturday between these two teams. And then the final series we're going to talk about in this one ended on Wednesday night between the Minnesota Timberwolves and my Los Angeles Lakers. Timberwolves won 103-96, and man, I gotta say, I knew the Lakers were not winning this game basically from the jump because they were playing with no heart. It was so, like, it looked like they were ready to go. They were knocking down some shots, but then just as the game started to wear on, they just looked pathetic. And that's how it ended up, pathetic. They did not show up, and hell, they made Rudy Gobert look like the greatest player in the league in Wednesday's night game. He had 27 points and 24 rebounds, absolutely annihilated them. Julius Randle, he had 25 points. Anthony Edwards only needed 15 points in this one. So it was just straight up domination by the Timberwolves in this entire series. Even the game that the Lakers won, they barely won that one. But the LeBron era as a Laker fan continues to be very fucking disappointing. Yes, we got us a championship in 2020. But that was a weird season, as we all know. Now I will say, before COVID, the Lakers were the number one overall seed heading into that. And then, you know, the whole season had to shut down for a couple months and they had to play in the bubble. So they basically were what they were, you know, winning the championship, but they definitely benefited from a couple months off of basketball. Plus, they were able to take advantage of, you know, because some teams just straight up crumbled because they couldn't handle being in the bubble. But other than that, every other year in the LeBron James era, we either are eliminated in the first round. We did make the Western Conference Finals a couple years ago, but we got swept out of the Western Conference Finals. So the only two, like, really good playoff years with LeBron, 2020 and a couple years ago when we got swept out of the Western Conference Finals by the Nuggets. Other than that, we either don't make the playoffs or get eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. That is the LeBron era here. And I'm not blaming him, by the way. I'm just simply pointing out that, you know, everybody likes to make all these arguments as to why LeBron James is the greatest of all time. And he's definitely the greatest of this era. But no, there's a reason why some of us rank the Kareems and the Michael Jordans and the Bill Russells above LeBron, because this Lakers era of LeBron has been very, very, very mediocre. Sorry, but it has. So it was just a very disappointing end, especially, you know, I did predict them, obviously, when I made my NBA playoff predictions. I predicted they would go to the NBA finals and win it all. Of course, that was mostly like stupid fandom, but at the same time, they were a legit fucking squad, but they just did what they did all fucking season long, just reverted to throwing up the stupid three-pointer rather than setting up a goddamn play and opening up shots and opportunities for the rest of the fucking team. Let's get it together. There was many problems with this team, but they were just never consistent all season long. But to be eliminated in the first fucking round is very disappointing, just in my personal opinion. And I don't like it, and it pissed me the fuck off. And I can't believe that they couldn't even get two wins in this series. That was pathetic. Just pathetic as a Lakers fan. So as a Lakers fan, I am pissed off and not happy about it. But hey. It is what it is, and now I don't have to fucking think about it. I could just sit back and enjoy the rest of basketball and just take the rest of the playoffs for what it is and just have fun and have no emotional attachments whatsoever because my team is sitting their asses on the fucking couch. So we do have a Eastern Conference semifinals matchup beginning this weekend. On Sunday, the game one between the Indiana Pacers and the Cleveland Cavaliers begins. I think this series is going to be a pretty quick one. And the reason why is because I just think Cleveland is a really damn good team. They've been number one for a reason, and Indiana has been pretty inconsistent. Now, they did take care of Milwaukee handedly. That was a very easy series for them, I would say. But Cleveland's a different beast. They are much more consistent. They play great offensively. If this turns into an offensive shootout, I'm taking Cleveland 10 out of 10 times. But defensively, they play great as well. So if Cleveland plays the way they play, I think this is actually going to be a five-game series that Cleveland wins easily. So that's what I'm expecting from this series. Obviously, we will be talking about the rest of the conference semifinals on Monday's show because we still have, obviously, some game sevens game six and sevens to be played over the weekend. But we will be talking about some more of those matchups as they develop on Monday's show. And then a little bit of extra basketball news that was breaking news today. Not surprising at all, but Greg Popovich is officially done coaching with the San Antonio Spurs. He's apparently moving into a president position, so he's still going to be working with the team. And honestly, like I said, this is not surprising because he's had health issues all season long. Actually, he's had health issues over the last couple of seasons, but this year it's been really bad. He obviously had the stroke. He wasn't able to finish off the season. And then he had some type of medical emergency just only a couple weeks ago. So I'm not shocked at all by this news. You know, Greg Popovich, one of the greatest coaches ever, hands fucking down. One of the greatest to ever do it. Completely turned around this organization single-handedly. I mean, obviously he had some great players along the way, but just the way he coached this team, he had a way of doing it, and he always did it. He never wavered, and he was great until the end. I mean, I know the last couple of seasons were not good, but he also didn't have a lot of talent, and we didn't really get to see what he was able to do with Wemby, but he is moving into a president role with this team, so he's still going to be working with the team, but definitely not head coaching. I think head coaching in and of itself is taxing on your health. So if you've already had something like a stroke, it's not... And you're only getting older as well. You're not prolonging your health in any way, shape, or form. Continuing to be a head coach in the NBA, it's a very high volatile job. And moving into a role, a different like front office role, is much better because, I mean, obviously the dude knows basketball inside and out. So moving on to baseball and what happened this week. I mean, we had a lot of high-scoring games. Beginning with Monday, the New York Mets smashed the Washington Nationals 19-5. And Brandon Nimmo had a team record 9 RBI in this game. He went 4-for-6 with 2 home runs, 9 RBI, and 4 runs. Just had a fantastic game. And this New York Mets team is just getting going because Soto actually had a game. I think it was yesterday or the day before, he had 2 home runs in a game. So Soto is he seems like he's about to get back on track himself, and this team's already having zero issue scoring runs and showed it on Monday night. Then on Tuesday, the New York Yankees, they also scored a bunch of runs on the Baltimore Orioles, 15-3. And this was the second time this season where in the first inning, the Yankees went back-to-back-to-back home runs. As a matter of fact, they had four home runs in the first inning. It's just it was the first four out of five batters. So it was Grisham was the leadoff hitter. He hits a home run. The craziest thing, too, is they were all in the same area, too, all to right field in, like, the exact same spot. But Grisham comes up, leadoff home run. Then Aaron Judge comes up to bat. He hits a home run. Then Rice comes up to bat. He hits a home run. As a matter of fact, Rice had two home runs in this game. And then Bellinger, he comes up to bat in the number five position, and he hits a home run. And those weren't the only home runs, by the way, but it's just that's the second time the Yankees have done it. I told you they were not going to have any issues with missing Soto this year. They were going to have zero issues with it. They made great moves in the offseason. And it is showing this right now already. I mean, Jesus Christ, Aaron Judge is insane. The month of April that this dude just had is just nuts. So the Yankees having zero issues scoring runs. Then on Tuesday night as well, the Boston Red Sox had zero issues scoring runs over the Toronto Blue Jays. They got to win 10-2. And in their first three innings, they had five home runs from Duran, Bregman, Campbell, Devers, and Abreu. So they also had a great game. And then also, something was in the water on Tuesday because the Texas Rangers went off on the Sacramento A's, 15-2. And not only did they score a whole bunch of runs, but Jacob DeGrom got his first win, not only of the season, but his first win since 2023, because he did miss the majority of last year. He started the season off and then went on the injured list for the rest of the year, missed the rest of the year. But he has not had a win since 2023, so congratulations to him. He is back out there getting wins. I mean, it's not like he's had a terrible year. It's just he hasn't been able to get a win. And he was definitely able to get a win in this one. Then on Wednesday, speaking of wins, arguably the worst team in baseball this season is the Colorado Rockies. But they were able to stop the bleeding for just a bit. They were on an 8-game losing streak until the Atlanta Braves decided to lay an egg. And the Colorado Rockies finally broke their losing streak. They got a 2-1 win over Chris Sale. I mean, it was actually a battle of two starting pitchers. They were going at it. But Chris Sale, you know, he was just the last season. He won the Cy Young Award, and he could not do any wrong. I mean, it was almost like he couldn't lose a game last year. He was fantastic last year. Well, it's the exact opposite this year. It's not like he's pitching terribly. It's not really him, per se. It's just he's also kind of having the same problem that DeGrom is having, where he just can't get a win. I mean, he pitched lights out in this game against Colorado. It's just Colorado was able to get the couple of runs that they needed. And they were able to break that losing streak. But real talk, Colorado Rockies, whew, they are not looking good this season. And then on Thursday, a team that's looking great offensively still, the Chicago Cubs got a win over the Pittsburgh Pirates 8-3. But the story in this one is fantastic pitcher Paul Skeens. He's not known for giving up home runs. Well, in this one, he gave up three home runs against the Chicago Cubs, and that's why it's noteworthy because Skeens usually is very, very, very stingy with the home runs, but he gave up three. But that's not shocking because the Chicago Cubs all season long have just been kicking everybody's ass and having zero issues scoring runs. Moving on to boxing, we actually have quite a few really solid boxing matchups this weekend, but I'm only going to be talking about the one that's interesting to me. That's because I've followed this guy's career for quite some time, and I really enjoy his boxing, and he is my favorite boxer in this era, and that is Canelo Alvarez. He, you know, it's Cinco de Mayo weekend, so he always fights Cinco de Mayo weekend. He is going up against William Skull, and Canelo Alvarez, record 62-2-2, and Skull is 23-0, so he's coming in undefeated. I will say I didn't know who Skull was. I had to go watch some of his highlights just to get familiar with what he's all about. He definitely has some bricks for hands. He can knock a motherfucker out, and if he gets you in a corner, he's really good at that just fast punches where you just don't really have a shot. But with that being said, he has this this style of boxing that I don't know if it's grown because over the years because of UFC, because they tend to do this a lot in UFC, and that is to keep your hand, to put your hands down. I've just always been of the mindset that you always keep your hands up in boxing. Like, you don't want to put your hands down. I mean, obviously there are the times you do, but it's, I just have never liked that technique. And this is a problem that I see with him because, Canelo Alvarez is going to take advantage of that easily. Now, Alvarez is obviously favored in this one. He should get the win, but I mean, that doesn't mean anything in this one, but still, like, that's just what I noticed from School's style of boxing, that he's got real, he's a knockout artist. The dude's gonna knock your ass out. He can really pummel the fuck out of you, but his defensive style is just, I think, gonna be a problem going up against Alvarez, who is just a real technician when it comes to just his hands and just what he does, and especially body shots. And I just think it's going to be probably a fairly easy one for Alvarez, as a matter of fact. I'm going to go with, he hasn't had a knockout in a while. So, you know what? I'm not going to go, like, straight up, like, boom, to the ground knockout. I'm going to go an old-fashioned Canelo Alvarez. You know, he's always great with the body shots. Let's go body shot knockout in the, this goes eight rounds. Let's go eight rounds. I'm going to go eight rounds. Canelo Alvarez wins by knockout with a body shot. Let's go with that. Just because, like I said, I don't really like the dude's defensive skills, but who knows? Those were just highlights, and hey, this is probably one of the greatest opportunities that he's ever getting of his life. So take advantage, and hey, gets a win over Alvarez. That's going to be on your resume for the rest of your life. So take it, but I think Alvarez is going to get the win. All right, moving on to my list this week. I decided to switch it up. You know, I'm done with my NBA GOATs of every decade, and I'm like, well, it's the NBA playoffs. So is there like a playoff theme I could go with? And I was like, oh, that's a good theme, because, you know, I was just talking about greatest players of all time, and I do like to talk about how, if you didn't watch the Michael Jordan era of basketball, you just don't get it. You really just don't get it. And that's not to talk down to anybody. That's just to point out, like, you don't understand what this dude did for the league and just why so many of us put him in the greatest of all time category, especially over somebody like LeBron, because, like, Michael Jordan's killer instinct was just something else. The way he took over a game was something else. What he did for the league was just something else. And if you didn't experience it, you really, it's hard to explain it to you, because you just don't know what he specifically did for the league. I mean, there are many great players throughout the history of the league. But one of the reasons why Michael Jordan is still revered as the greatest of all time, it's not just the championships and not just the playoffs, but it's also what he's done overall in his entire legacy. I mean, the whole branding of yourself as an entertainer. I mean, not even just athletes. I mean, so many athletes have shoe deals and or just Nike deals or Adidas deals. Those would not be possible without Michael Jordan. He changed that entire thing with his deal with Nike. I mean, we still see commercials about Michael Jordan. He still is a relevant figure in society simply because of his Jordan brand. I mean, the Jordan brand is never going anywhere. Even when Michael Jordan dies, the Jordan brand is still going to be a brand because it's the Jordan brand. It is a legacy fucking brand. And that would not be possible without Michael Jordan and the greatness of his career that he had. So I decided this week, I'm going to do the top five Michael Jordan playoff moments, because he was one of the greatest playoff players, period. When he played in the playoffs, you were getting the greatest motherfucker. You weren't getting a dude who was going to disappear in the game. And even if he did disappear in the game, motherfucker was coming out at some point. You knew it. You just fucking knew it when he came out. And so, I decided, you know, it's the playoffs. Let's talk about his players. So I was thinking about maybe ranking his NBA finals overall, but I'm like, nah, let's just do overall playoff moments, because he has had some of the most memorable playoff moments straight up. So let's start off with number five, the 1989 Eastern Conference Finals, Game 5 versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, this is what is known as the shot. It's the shot over Elo. And he just, oh, it's just beautiful. But his stat line, 44 points, 17 for 32, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, and 1 steal. He just was all over the court and just making all the plays that he needed to make. And when he made that shot, that sent the Chicago Bulls to the NBA Finals. And that's just what it was with him, is that his last shot, you knew. If the ball was in Michael Jordan's hands, it don't matter if you got the whole team on Michael Jordan, that ball's going in. It doesn't matter if he is at the half court line and he's got 5 dudes on him. If Michael Jordan gets up a good shot, that shit is going in, and it's going in for the win, and he's going to the NBA Finals, and y'all are going home, Craig Elo. Then at number four, I'm going to drop 5 Michael Jordan playoff moments. I have the 1993 Game 4 NBA Finals versus the Phoenix Suns. This is a showdown of the ages between Charles Barkley, who won MVP this year in that season. And this Phoenix Suns team was damn good, especially because, you know, Barkley won the MVP. But this game was crazy. It was a battle between two of the greatest players in the league at the moment. Barkley just dominating the paint, making all the points. He had a triple-double in this game, went 32 points, 12 rebounds, and 10 assists. So Barkley dominated this game. But Michael Jordan was like, nah, bitch, I'm Michael Jordan. I'm going to throw up 55 points and take a 3-1 series lead in this one. And it would actually be the first of the three-peats for Michael Jordan in the NBA Finals, because they would win this series, obviously. But like I said, it was the first of the three-peats, of the two three-peats for Michael Jordan in a crazy game. I mean, if you watch the highlights, it's just crazy to watch he and Barkley just battle back and forth, especially down the stretch. It was just like pound-for-pound fight between these two, and Jordan, of course, gets the win in the end and the ring, and Barkley has none. Then at number three on my top 5 Michael Jordan playoff moments, the 1986 Eastern Conference Finals, Game 2 versus the Boston Celtics. Now, this was a loss for the Chicago Bulls, but this is what is known as the Michael Jordan takeover. This is the moment when he took over the league. Now, we all knew what he was. When he was coming out of North Carolina, as a matter of fact, when he got drafted, everybody knew he was going to be a good player. Now, nobody was projecting him being the greatest of all time, but everybody knew you were getting a good player if you were drafting Michael Jordan. Then as he starts actually playing, you're like, whoa, this guy is nuts. But this 1986 Game 2 versus the Boston Celtics, let me say that again, 1986 Boston Celtics, okay? The Boston Celtics of the 80s are one of the greatest dynasties to ever be created in the history of the league, okay? And Michael Jordan went up against this team and single-handedly just played amazing. Now, like I said, it was a loss. They actually got swept out of this series. But it was just the welcome to the Michael Jordan era moment. This was when everything changed in the league. And this was when Michael Jordan would become the dude and start to percolate each and every year up until he takes over in the 90s. 1986, Game 2. He had 63 points. Went 22 for 41, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. That's the thing about Michael Jordan's stat line, is like he covers every stat category you possibly can. He was just such a beast defensively as well. We're going to get to that in one of these top moments above this one. But I mean, he just made the plays when you needed to make the plays. And he was so determined to beat this Celtics team just single-handedly by himself. But he couldn't do it. But it ended up this game, particularly this game two, in which he scored 63 points, was a double overtime loss. And it was a sweep in 3 games, because back in the 80s, this if you got three wins, that's when you would you would win the series as opposed to four now. But in those three games, Michael Jordan's stat line, he averaged 43.7 points per game, 6.3 rebounds per game, and 5.7 assists per game. And Larry Bird is known to have said this, quoted as saying this, Larry Bird. If you don't know what Larry Bird was about, Larry Bird was a bad motherfucker who did not hand out compliments, by the way. Ask Magic fucking Johnson, okay? Larry Bird was an asshole, as a matter of fact, and he would be happy to take that title, by the way. He was not known for being nice. He was not known for giving compliments. This is a direct quote after this game by Larry Bird. It's just God disguised as Michael Jordan. That is how you know how great Michael Jordan is because Larry Bird, the biggest asshole on earth, just called Michael Jordan God in 1986 when they were winning championships and Michael Jordan was 3 years away from sniffing a championship. So that's why that had to be in this top five, even though it was a loss. It was a welcome to the Michael Jordan era moment, and he never looked back from that point on. Then at number two on my top five Michael Jordan playoff moments, arguably the most famous Michael Jordan moment of all time. 1997 Finals, Game 5 versus the Utah Jazz. It is known as the flu game, even though now we know it wasn't the flu that was actually the problem, it was food poisoning. But since it's called the flu game, it's been called the flu game for decades now, we're just going to continue to call it the flu game, even though it's the food poisoning game. But motherfucker Michael Jordan was sick as a motherfucker. He had a pizza the night before and then just ended up puking his guts out the entire night leading up to this game. They didn't even know if he was going to play. But Michael Jordan, being Michael Jordan, not only did he play, but he had a fantastic game and had the game-winning three-pointer. That is this game. I mean, his stat line. 38 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, 1 block, game-winning 3-pointer, and was carried off the court at one point in an iconic moment by Scottie Pippen in which he could just barely get off the court, but the dude put it all out there when he was sick as a motherfucker. And you know, everybody knows, when you are that sick where you are vomiting and shitting your guts out, you are so dehydrated because of all that, and this dude had all that all day leading up to that game, then exerts all that energy on the court. And if you don't watch basketball, these motherfuckers be sweating like a motherfucker because they're running, 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 running all up and down this court the entire four quarters. And this dude not only played while sick, he played one of the greatest games of his entire career, and it literally is one of the most iconic games ever. I would have put it number one, but I couldn't put it number one because number one is the epitome of Michael Jordan. Honestly, if you actually look at the game just from like, I mean, stat line actually is pretty good in my opinion, but overall it was a very sloppy game from Michael Jordan. I wouldn't say it was technically his greatest game ever, but it was the epitome of what Michael Jordan is, and of course it would be his last game ever as a Chicago Bull. And that is 1998 NBA Finals, Game 6 versus the Utah Jazz, in his last game as a Chicago Bull. But I mean, he was missing shots and just not playing typical Michael Jordan basketball. But what he was able to do was come together when he was needed the most, and of course would make the game-winning shot. So what really about this game is the most impressive about it is the final 3 minutes of this game, because that is when Michael Jordan took over. Like I said, he was missing shots, and even in this final 3 minutes, he missed a couple of shots as well. His stat line ended up being 45 points. That's why I'm like, this is not a terrible game. He went 15 for 35, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 4 steals. But just overall, it was a very sloppy Michael Jordan game. As a matter of fact, when I was rewatching it, I actually equated it to Game 7 of the 2010 NBA Finals between the Lakers and the Boston Celtics, when Kobe Bryant did not have a good game. And he needed everybody else around him to step up and have a good game. And yes, he stepped up in the fourth quarter when he was needed, knocked down the free throws when he needed to, and made the shots when he had to. But for the most part, it was not a good game from Kobe. But he did exactly the same thing that Michael Jordan did in this one, and that is just kept it moving. Even though Jordan was not playing great, and Utah's looking like they might actually pull this one out and get the win, nah, Jordan was like, you know what? We still got 3 minutes. I could still do this. So what ends up happening is, even though he's missing some shots down the stretch here, he actually is getting to the line, and he knocked down all of his free throws. So he's knocking down the clutch free throws and stopping the clock and doing what you need to do to catch up. Then once they catch up, he turns the defense on. He ends up with the steal. He ends up making this beautiful layup right in the paint. But the steal that he makes towards the end is just beautiful because I can't remember who has the ball. Is it Stockton? It might be Stockton who had the ball. Or is it Malone? I think it's Malone, actually. Malone had the ball. And he just straight up swats the ball out of Malone's hand. It's not even close to a foul. That's how crazy this was. Jordan's just right there. Boom. Swats the ball out of Malone's hand and gets the ball. And then they end up taking the ball down the court. And, of course, Jordan has one of his most iconic game-winning shots ever, where he basically just, boop, slides the dude out of the way. Game-winning right over. Boop, knocks it down. And, I mean, he's running on fumes. You could just tell Jordan is just dying towards the end of this game, but when he's needed, he's needed. And that's why I picked this as number one, because not only is it his last game as a Chicago Bull, but I mean, it's in the NBA Finals. It's for everything. This is just exactly what Michael Jordan was. Not only would he kill you with these 63-point games or 55-point games, or just blow you out of the water, or then also have these flu games, but then when he's needed, even if he's having a shitty game, he does not give up. And that is the difference between Michael Jordan and every other motherfucker to ever play this game ever. The dude was a beast on the court. And real talk, if you've never seen the 1998 final 3 minutes of Game 6 NBA Finals, watch it. It is just crazy to watch Michael Jordan just single-handedly basically just bring his team back from the brink on that one. And he's not making shots, but like I said, he's getting to the line, knocking down the free throws, stopping the clock, and just helping his team get that win. All right, y'all, enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you on Monday.